Today is January 29, 1985, and this interview is taking place at the Audiovisual Center at Morehead State University. My name is Sandy Scheel, and I'm interviewing Fran Akeley about the Fargo-Moorhead Junior League. Fran, could you tell me a little bit about how the Association of Junior Leagues was started?
That takes us back to New York City at the turn of the century. In 1901, a group of young women, mostly debutantes, probably young marrieds without too awfully much to do, but a social conscience, wanted to get together and meet the special needs of the city and their surrounding communities. And so they organized the first junior league. Specifically, it was Mary Harriman, who is the sister of, or was, I believe she's died now, is the sister of Averill Harriman. 20 years later, 30 leagues had sprung up in large cities under the name of the Association of Junior Leagues of America. Now, that fancy title was changed 50 years later to the Association of Junior Leagues because it does cross national boundaries. There are some in Canada and one in London. Today, there are 110,000 women who are members of 257 leagues in 47 states. About 120 of those are our own league members today.
Okay, now, on a local level, how was it started and by whom?
That takes us back to about 1954. And it was during the years following the end of World War II, we'll say 1946 to 1950. Many of us were returning from the dislocation of army duties elsewhere, and that, or those of us who had been left at home, that dormant period of waiting for husbands to return. Households were becoming reestablished, and communities were setting about their businesses again. So the early 50s found a burgeoning of plans. There was so much that had to be done, and one of the things was the Salk vaccine trials, which was to eliminate polio from the world. And Cass County had been chosen of one of a small number of counties where this test was to be run. Ann Weibel, who was the wife of a local physician, was approached to organize a group of women who would put this in motion. It was a monumental task. For some, it was a 9-to-5 job. So she called half dozen of her friends whose abilities she respected, and they successfully completed this field trial. So since that had been so much fun and each one had enjoyed the other, her thought was there'll be other occasions such as this that will arise, and what a great idea it would be to have an organization established in this city that was prepared to go. She had grown up in Minneapolis and was familiar with the way the Junior League operated, as were three, I believe, Alma Lewis from St. Paul and Mimi Langer-Gokey from St. Paul and Jane Taylor from Sioux City, Iowa, all of whom had been members of junior leagues in their communities. So they were among the few of the beginners. And so we had a meeting, and everyone started off in a different direction with her own special ideas and came back with reports, which was our own provisional course training as it is today. So that's the way it all began.
And there were about 20 of you?
There were 20 of us. And we always kept in mind that we wanted to achieve the goals that had been so successfully demonstrated by the Association of Junior Leagues. So we never lost track of that. And we patterned ourselves, our bylaws, our rules and regulations on that organization. And that was our control, so to speak. Sick. 2 years later, we decided to apply for membership in the Association of Junior Leagues, and that was the year that I was president. Received this very polite letter saying, thank you very much, we are interested in your group. However, you must be on a provisional basis and we'll be very happy to look at you over the next 7 years. Well, I felt sort of like Winston Churchill, who was elected Prime Minister of England, who said he didn't intend to preside over the disintegration of the British Empire. I felt assured that I was presiding over the disintegration of this marvelous organization. But we settled our hats and pulled on our gloves and went to work. And it was successfully completed 7 years later.
7 years later.
Yes.
Okay, now, would you tell us a little bit about the process, specifics they gave you?
The specifics. Well, one of the first things we had to be sure that we could do was set up a volunteer bureau, and that was almost a requisite to see whether we had the ability, whether we had the size community that could support this kind of activity. So that was one of the things that we started. Then, you want to know about some of the projects that we had? Well, good heavens, there were some of them are still going, such as the Red River Annual, which began as the Juried Art Show. There were hospital carts, and that was a frustrating experience at that time because we were trying to finance it, and we really didn't have too much money. But I was interested the other day in being in the hospital and seeing that the hospital carts are going along very nicely. We had a well baby clinic, which entailed each girl picking up a baby at a foster home, having it examined by a pediatrician, and then returned to the foster home. Many of us left our own children with babysitters to pick up children in foster homes to take to the doctor. It was a way of speeding up the adoption process, and that was always a very favorite project. Then there's even one that I had to plumb my memory to remember what in the world it was. It was called the Filter Center. It was in a school which has been torn down now in Fargo, and I think it was the Washington School. This was immediately following the war, and everyone was on tenterhooks, fearful of this horrible nuclear holocaust, which was going to follow during the Cold War. And the Filter Center was manned on a 24-hour basis, telephone basis. Anyone who saw UFOs or anything that didn't pass inspection called this into the Filter Center. It was entered over to the proper authorities who investigated it. But that, I don't think that lasted very long. And we also even had a very odd project called the Rocking Chair Project, which was to find, repair, and put in working order rocking chairs, which would be given to our senior citizens. I'm not sure how long that lasted.
I love that.
Some of the ones that have really endured were Family Service, and the Volunteer Bureau, I believe, is still going. And the Red River Annual, of course, is now very well managed. And the purpose of our projects in the Junior League concept is innovative, and that is to find the need in the community, get the project to work, and in the process of getting it to work, involving other members of the community, and then eventually turning them over to that organization. For instance, is the Well Baby Clinic happened to be a project of the Lutheran Hospitals and Homes, I think, and that was eventually turned over to them completely. And as of today, the Bucket Brigade, I don't know whether that's still going.
Yes.
That might be turned over to the Parent and Teachers Association. There was one project called the Orthorator, which was an eye testing machine. And members of the Junior League learned how to operate that. And they went into all of the grade schools, I think on the third grade level. And as soon as they had that going and organized, they turned it over to the individual PTAs, which is the basic concept of Junior League projects.
Mm-hmm. And now, you've mentioned the purpose a little bit of Junior League and the kind of services that are provided. But when you were president of League, and you were president in 57-58,
yes.
Is that correct? How did people come to you? Did groups come to you? Or did you mostly go out to them to find projects?
It worked both ways. We were such a new organization at that time that I don't believe that groups came to us One in particular that came to us was family service. The concept of family counseling was really quite new in the 50s, early 50s, and Virginia Scheel became very interested in it, and whether they came to her and then she to us, I'm not sure, but that was one place where the group came to us. Another one of our very involved and consuming projects was the Opportunity School. That was found by one of our young eager beavers, Jane Heller, who found this struggling school called the Pilot School, which had been put together by parents of handicapped children. They really had no idea of how to go for money, where to go for organization. And she became extremely interested in that and reorganized it, came to the Junior League, asked them for their support. It was met with immediate acceptance. And then she went out into the community, and we went out into the community and got community participation. And as you probably know, it is now part of the public school system.
Right. Well, now, with all these projects, we should talk a little bit about the funding and how you raised money for the different projects that you were supporting.
Well, the only thing that we could think of, I suppose, in our innocence and inexperience was a glorified rummage sale. So we had a contest to find out, to decide what sort of spark name we would get for this. And Alma Lewis won the contest with The Next to New. So we had our first Next to New in the fall of 1955. In a very small shop of what is now the White Drug. And Jane Stern and I were in charge. We had probably the fanciest rummage sale that had ever hit town, and we made $755. We thought we had made a mint. There were only 25 of us. But really, the financing of our projects is something to be marveled at. We had, I like to say that John Maynard Keynes is the one who invented deficit spending, but we're the ones who really put it to work. we would blithely choose our projects, and then we would try to figure out how we were going to fund them. That was one of the things that the Association of Junior Leagues changed also. They said we had to have money in the bank before we chose the projects. But somehow, things happened, and we managed to get our money somehow by begging or one other project that we had. The Next New, as you know, has grown from the $755 to what did we make?
$35,000
mm-hmm. last year in one day. It's astonishing. The other project which we had. And the history wouldn't be complete without talking about the Red Bandana Follies. And Follies it really was. We were going to make just pots of money. There's a company called Cargill, and it's still in operating.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine you still get letters
every
from them.
Every year.
Well, they sold us on the idea of putting on this marvelous song and dance show. So we rented the auditorium. The Civic Auditorium was then brand new. Well, we perpetrated a terrible hoax on our unsuspecting friends and relatives. We sold them advertising. Then we sold them patron tickets for non-existing box seats. In order to watch us do our thing, the director arrived and sorted us all into piles according to the various numbers that there were going to be. There were Oriental Geisha girls. There were Broadway babies. There were Can-Can girls. And the miracle was going to be the costumes, because he was going to send the costumes from New York. Here are beautiful costumes. Well, they were going to transform all of us into glittering showgirls and Ziegfeld Follies types. Well, when the costumes arrived, they were really ragged as the script was. And then, as phony as the director, by the way, he was. the sound system didn't work, and it was an absolute fiasco, but we did make some money on it. The only item that lived up to our expectations were those theatrical black opera-type stockings, stretch stockings, which many of us still have as sort of a merit badge.
Keep it to remind you of what you did.
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. Now, everyone was pretty much involved in that, weren't they?
With everybody. Husbands also, some reluctantly and some enthusiastically.
I just think that's great.
It was fun. I don't know that I would suggest that you try it again.
Well, the opportunity's there because they do write every year. But we'll go look at your stockings and see if we really want to do that or not. Fran, will you tell me a little bit about how you met back then? Was it a monthly meeting like it is now? Lunches or?
Great heavens! It seems to me we met every day for one reason or another. We were kind of one of the criteria was that everyone spends 75 hours a year on a project. And we kept hours. And, of course, many of us were involved, spent hours with PTA and church and that sort of thing. So there was always a great argument as to what hours counted and what hours didn't count. Mm-hmm. But that had nothing to do with committee meetings and side meetings and that sort of thing. So it seems to me that for most of us, most of that original 20 and then when we achieved the size of 30, our days, our lives were dedicated to this sort of mm-hmm. So that's how much time it seems that we spent on it.
It's hard to get something like that going.
Well, it was fun. I don't know. I can't imagine life without it. It was just great. And we all learned in the doing. And it's really amazing today when you talk with some of the girls who then went on into business things, who have said, had absolutely no previous training whatsoever except my junior league experience, which qualified me, gave me the confidence mm-hmm. to take on this particular professional job, which she was doing. One of the things about the training for junior league volunteerism is professionalism.
Yeah, that's, I think, one of their hallmarks, really.
Yes, it is.
When you were starting to recruit your members, can you tell me a little bit about, you know, how you selected people and what type of people, how that may have been different then and changed now?
Well, it has changed. It has changed enormously. I'm going to go back just a little bit. The Junior League is unique among organizations in the way it has adapted to changing of times. Basic to its core philosophy is that we are all dedicated to training and education. We encourage initiative and imagination. We believe thoroughly in the democratic organizational procedures. The league is completely dependent upon the individuals in the group for its success. Membership has sort of a threefold connotation: education, participation, and obligation. Those three things. We do, we research a project very carefully, educate ourselves well, we prepare ourselves, and then we have the obligation to do it as professionally and as thoroughly as possible. And that is our reputation. Choosing members has changed from the 19-1 concept of the debutante down through the years, the intermediate years, when membership was really by invitation to the point that it was discriminatory. Mm-hmm. Today we have, as you know, open admissions. It still is, if you were to look at the group, you would see that they're young women of congenial interest and background. And those who want to focus their attention and their efforts on their community, on its strength and on its weakness, and to learn the value of community cooperation in any given program. And for guidance, we have the training and experience offered by the Junior League. And the beginners share in the prestige of the ones who have gone before and have earned the merit badges, so to speak, of our reputation.
Right. Well, in the initial stages of the league, I know you have the fundraisers to fund the projects, but how about the league itself? Did you have dues?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. The dues were, I can't even remember what they were at the beginning. Let's say they were $10 a year, some mm-hmm. such thing, and they have gradually risen as time has gone on.
And did you have an office?
No. Our offices were in the officers' homes. The president had all the president's material in her home. The treasurer had all the treasurer's material in her home. Mm-hmm. It was really difficult. And it wasn't until the Red Cross took over the R.S. Lewis house on 3rd Avenue that they made available the space on the top floor for an honest-to-goodness bona fide office.
Yeah, that was the first office.
That was the first office we ever had.
I wasn't aware of that. Do you recall when the League first started to seek out grants in that?
I don't know. It was Judy Cox is the one you should ask about that, because she was the first person who really studied grantsmanship.
Mm-hmm.
And, let's say that's 5 years ago.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And before that, I don't believe we had attempted to go to outside sources as the grants are done. I must say that with the Opportunity School, for instance, we went to the Elks Club for a grant. Actually, Jane would collar people on the street.
Jane Heller?
Jane Heller would collar people on the street and say, would you like to give some money to the Opportunity School? But there was never anything so organized or so studied as grants until that time, at least.
Hotline had some form of outside funding, didn't it?
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible. Yeah. I wasn't involved in that then.
Okay, well, how did you develop the leaders out of the group?
They rose to the surface. As in, I think, in all groups, it would become very apparent.
Mm-hmm.
That we never seemed to have any problems with our with our officers at all.
I think my personal experience has been that Junior League is very unique in that respect, that there is always a surplus of leaders, and getting people to accept positions of leadership is very easy, where in other groups it's not always that easy. It's been very easy to find people willing to accept the responsibilities.
Well, you are president now. I have been at one time, and I considered it one of the greatest experiences that I have ever had.
Mm-hmm.
I found I could do things I'd never thought I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tremendous sense of accomplishment. Plus, it's also a great honor when you are part of a group of pros like that, and then to be asked to be the president.
Yes, it is.
Is quite a...
It is an honor.
It is an honor.
Can you think of any of the members that have played important roles in the community because of things that they have learned, or, you know, in part with the things they have learned?
Do you know, I think you could take almost any... Tracy Moorhead.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think you can take almost any organization in this community, and you will find that whoever is involved has had some junior league
experience. It's amazing, isn't
it? Irene Diedrich, Phyllis Thysel. I would hate to begin to name them, because someone would be left out. Sally Adelson.
There's all kinds of them.
Jossie Burdick. Oh, yes, there are just so many.
Yeah. You made reference earlier to a centennial calendar that Junior League was asked to write up a bit of a description to appear in the centennial calendar. I think that's kind of a compliment, that they were already recognized after really only 20 years of existence. They were recognized that they wanted to have them on the centennial calendar. Would you give us part of that description?
Well, part of it was supposed to have been a history, and it reads, "Volunteer service has been a way of life in this community from its inception. The plight of less fortunate families was one of the earliest concerns of local women, as was the establishment of an excellent and active cultural climate in which to raise their children. Women from Fargo did much to speed the arrival of women's suffrage." And that we know. There was Mary Darrow Weibel and some of her cohorts who were very active in women's suffrage. So with such a background, it's not surprising that the interest in the formation of the Junior League was generated, as I'd said before, by the Salk vaccine trials. So I think that's probably the answer to your question.
We had talked about the fact that Junior League has sort of a unique place in the community and the image it has, and you were telling me a story about being sought out, and I'd like you to tell that one.
Well, I suppose without naming names or situation. Well, actually, I think maybe the situation was sort of interesting. This is a doctor who is now dead, who had the vision that this could be a marvelous community medical center if all of the medical facilities were coordinated. Mm-hmm. It was a lovely dream, and I remember that he came back to me, and he said, if only the Junior League would take this on. This is, heavens, this has to be back in the late 50s. If only the Junior League would take it on, I know it would go. I'm convinced that the Junior League can do anything it decides to do. Well, this was not our cup of tea, and nothing happened to it, and we didn't go ahead with it. But that has been the reputation of the league for, I think, perhaps since its inception. Oh, we also had a great deal to do with the establishment of what was educational TV at that time and is now PBS. Mm-hmm. Judy Williams and Dr. Ted Donay, I think, were the two who really put the thing together. She worked her heart out for 2 or 3 years on it until it finally had it going.
Well, and League was responsible for starting the Friends organization at PBS, I believe.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Yeah. How do you feel that, you know, the organization changes as the community changes? And you've sort of addressed that, that Junior League has always been able to change with the times. How do you explain the fact that this group of women has been so able to keep pace with what's going on?
They're aware. I think the association like breeds like very often,
mm-hmm.
and they spark each other. I'm not talking about Fargo-Moorhead particularly, but I think nationally, and moving from the strictly cultural and welfare concern particularly at the very beginning, then I'm talking about 1901, mm-hmm. we'll say, then the involvement in the arts, and it was an unstated concept that we were not to get involved in politics. Now that would be the feeling in the 50s and the early 60s. What a change today. We now have impact groups, people very involved in controversial things. The emphasis was on the arts. And anything that smacked of politics or activism was considered too hot to handle.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we speak out on public issues with impact groups challenging social issues, such as child advocacy, the rape and abuse crisis, wife and child abuse, matters that were rarely even discussed in the 50s.
Right.
And that is a complete turnaround.
And now this group's publicly lobbying on these
issues. Yeah. Which was considered an impossibility at that time.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite project when you were active in Junior League?
Yes, I guess I did. It was the Symphony and the Women's Association and ETM Public Broadcasting.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, I was very involved in the what is now the Plains Art Museum, which began as a sort of help for the struggling Rourke Museum, the then struggling Rourke Museum. We organized speakers bureaus because we felt that Jim had done such a good job establishing a commercial art museum that it was too bad to let the impetus go. And so we established speakers bureaus, which went to every organization who would have us, garnering help to establish a community museum, which is now the Plains Art Museum.
Mm-hmm. How many people do you think were involved in the Speakers Bureau? How many speakers?
About five.
About five. Mm-hmm. That can cover a lot of groups, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Do you have any particular memories that, situations that were particularly funny?
that you might get a kick out of. We had a project. That was the Florence Crittenden Home.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Florence Crittenden Home still going?
I don't think it is, but it's just been a few years.
Just a few years. Yeah. Anyway, we had, this was the home for unwed mothers. And to help them improve their self-image was our main project. And so we put on style shows for pregnant teenagers. Many of us got terribly involved with each case. And there would be something for them once a week. Okay. Many of them were from small towns out in the area. Anyway, we were deciding we were almost doing too good a job when we looked at the number of repeaters that we had. So that project went by the board.
You made it too much fun.
I guess.
Well, back in the beginning when you were getting started, yeah, Junior League is well established now, and I think it's a very successful organization. What do you recall as being the biggest obstacle that you had to overcome?
Husbands. They gave us sort of grudging support, and our husbands didn't know too awfully much about what we were doing. As some Wag put it, breaking up our home life. But they also knew that we were having more fun than any other kids in the block. And dinner was often late. Mm-hmm. But somehow they realized that we were accomplishing something, and many were supportive and many were not. But this was a little bit new. Instead of the dishes and the diapers that the conversation around home used to be, they would their wives would be coming home with all sorts of exciting ideas and things that they had been doing. Mm-hmm. And it didn't take long before we had lots of support.
That's great. I think, you know, some of those things still exist. We have found at our house this year that life does exist on macaroni and cheese. Socks can be worn twice. You know, little things like that. But they all know that I'm happy, and that makes everything a lot easier to take. When you were president, and was there annual conferences each year? Did you go like we get to go now?
Well, you see, we were not associated with the a league at that time.
Right.
It wasn't until, whenever the year was that Kathy was...
That'd be 69, 60? I think. 65.
65, 66,
yeah.
So, we were completely on our own, but we never did lose track of... We also, of course, after that, during those 7 years of our, provisional status with the association,
mm-hmm.
we were given guidelines by them. They were very kind. I think the puppet play... Mr. Crinkle's Nose, was
yes.
that it? Came from them, and they were very kind about answering any questions we had. And after they had been out here the first time, they were so smitten with this community, they just absolutely couldn't get over the fact that there was not only a place called Fargo, but that it had what it had, that they were very, very cooperative.
That's
so...
Great.
Yes, we although we did not have the meetings to go to, we did have some guidance.
We had guidelines. And what is your best personal recollection? What is the thing you remember the best about Junior League, about when you were active?
Well, I don't believe I could choose one single thing, Sandy. The whole experience was so great. I suppose if I were to choose one thing, it's the friendships which were made
mm-hmm.
under marvelous circumstances, because we were accomplishing something while we were making warm friendships. And the very fact that we were a part of something which is so important to this community today,
mm-hmm.
I think that would have to be my greatest recollection. Every day was fun, and there was always something new and terribly exciting, but it would take me quite a while to figure out which was the best.
Well, I don't know that that's changed. You know, there's something real exciting about belonging to an organization that makes such a difference in the community, and that you know they make good use of your time, and you're part of something that's successful. And you know, we have you to thank for that. There's just a handful of you at the beginning who did all that work, and I am pretty well aware of how much work went into that. And we just really appreciate all that that went on just 30 years ago. We're in our 30th year now. Doesn't seem like it's that many years to have accomplished all the things that Junior League has accomplished.
It is astonishing. It is an amazing organization. Well, this is a great community also. I think the pool of eligible, so-called eligible and potentials is mm-hmm. enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a great community to work in because it's not so large that the problems are insurmountable, and it's also so large that you don't feel that you've made an impact.
That's right.
And it's an exciting place to live and exciting place to do things for.
Well, did I miss any questions or anything you wanted to... Okay. All right, and I was wondering if there were any other stories or information you'd like to give me and where you think Junior League is going from here.
Well, the Junior League will have to and will keep changing as the times are changing. The voluntary sector is going to be increasingly called upon to be a leader as well as a participant in the areas where public policy is formulated and the matters of public interest are addressed. And in the coming decade, the association and its member leagues will face probably their greatest challenge, which will be the provision of critical community services that the government can no longer afford to maintain, both in the arts and in welfare. And so with that challenge, the associations are going to have to address these needs with limited resources and limitless needs. So there comes the opportunity to use all of this power of the voluntary initiative and strengthening the capacities of the communities to tackle these problems that have seemed insurmountable before.
It's always room for growth. Thank you very much, Fran. Appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.